Welcome to the Dogs and Deadlifts, Building Better Dogs podcast. If you like a podcast that is raw, unfiltered, and authentic, you have come to the right place. Our goal is to bring clarity around canine fitness and conditioning. We help people ignite their dog's performance and build better dogs. Join your host, Daniel Rose, as we discuss fitness, nutrition, and mindset for dogs. Let's do this. Are you lacking some clarity around dog nutrition, dog fitness, or scent work? You are not alone. Learn how to ignite your dog's physical and mental performance, safe, systematic, and injury-free. Yes, you can improve your dog's physical and mental performance and achieve amazing results following the Dogs and Deadlifts programming. Because this work is not just about you, it's whom you do it with. We understand you want to make sure your coach is the right fit. Get access to certified canine athlete specialist coach and owner of Dogs and Deadlifts, Daniel Rose. And you can figure out how to get the results you're looking for, whether it is your dog's general behavior, athletic performance, or sports scent detection. Book your 30-minute free online discovery call with Daniel today. The link is shown in the notes below.
So welcome back to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. Today we have another guest from the USA, Senior Team Leader Joseph Garcia. Welcome.
Hey, brother. How are you? Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your podcast.
Yeah, likewise. I know that, you know, we've been talking on and off for a little while and haven't been able to nail down a date until today. So I just want to say thank you very much as well for taking the time. I know that I'm excited for today's chat, and a lot of messages come in when I announced that you were coming on the show last week.
Awesome.
So a lot of people are excited for this chat. So what we might
it's a great podcast, man. And I know we've told a lot of our friends that we're going to be on your podcast. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's taken us a little while to get connected, but finally we're here. Yeah. So let's have a great time, man.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, for those people out there listening to my podcast, you know, I've got a variety of listeners from all walks of life, from, you know, pet dog owners right through to high performance units. I definitely know that, you know, there's some military guys, some corrections guys tune into the podcast. So I've got a big scope of listeners out there. So for those that don't know or you know, not familiar with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, go back as far as you wish.
I'm the senior team leader for a what we call a high-risk correction special operations mitigation unit, and I guess in English, or for you guys down under, anytime you hear of a major riot or a prison hostage situation inside of a prison, we're what they call a tier one team, and we can respond to any of 3,000 jails in the U.S. or internationally through what we call DOS, Department of State approved countries. So, like, you know, we've been to like Israel, Singapore, Guam, Saipan, Argentina, Brazil. I mean, we've been all over the world. But the unit that I lead specifically handles the most complex and critically challenging prison situations. And, you know, that's basically what we do. And I've been doing that now for going on 25 years, showing my age now, man.
It's all good. I've got some gray in my beard too.
Well, my wife hates it when I put a little bit of that hiding that gray stuff. Sometimes I look like Santa Claus.
we recently got, that's funny, cause I recently got the word that we had to clean, you know, be clean shaven for our I've had 2 weeks on rec leave, and it's come back. It's like, yeah.
I'm pretty lucky here, where, you know, they I think everybody on our unit wears a beard.
Yeah, we had to do our, you know, our recent mask fitting and, you know, our testing, and you know, yep. they prefer definitely clean shaven.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's, you know, I suppose when I first just, you know, I suppose must have been social media that I, that you popped up in, and we'll talk about a lot of things,
okay,
you know, soon, but the first thing that caught my eye, right, and this is, you'll probably get this quite a lot, is the type of dog that you use in your, within your unit.
Sure. So the requirement is basically that, that if you handle one of these giant schnauzers, you have to have a beard. So, yeah, these are really unique dogs, and I'm going to take you back to the very beginning for us, and I'm going to go back about 12 years ago, actually 13 years ago, and I was involved in our unit was deployed to a major ride here in the U.S., and I remember being in a room with about 500 responding officers, and we were a small team. About 17 of my guys came in, and they gave us one of the complex situations that we had to deal with for one of the housing units. You had almost 1,000 inmates going crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So we had a number of agencies from state police to city police. I mean, all different first responders. And somewhere in the meeting, the briefing, a number of canine officers came in, and they're walking through this crowd where they're directed to go and stand and kind of get set up. And as they're walking, I just remember like there was just like a sea, the sea of people kind of opened up as these dogs were coming in. And about maybe, 15, 20 seconds into me looking, asking one of my executive officers, I said, "Hey, who are these dudes, man?" "Oh, there is a guys from the you know, the canine and the different units." "Oh, got it. No problem." Because you hear the barking. I'm like, "Muzzle those dogs up, please, because I can't hear anything." I hear the loudest scream, right? The loudest scream coming from a guy. And I said, "Oh," I said, "that guy just got tagged." And so what happened was that Mally severed the Achilles of one of the captains as he was walking by. And I guess the captain backed up into the dog, and that dog just hit him right in the Achilles of all things. While the dog was in a down position, and that dog just hit that Achilles. So basically it severed his Achilles. So 2 days later, you ever have one of those meetings where you always have some guy in the room that says, "If that was me, I would do this or I would do that," right? The Monday morning quarterbacking guy.
Yep.
Well, on a debrief, I remember the wardens, we were debriefing, and they said, "Would any of you guys change anything about this?" I said, "Well, if it was me, I would do X, Y, and Z. Dogs would probably come in, maybe muzzled or shut up, you know, not screaming and barking, because I can't even hear myself. I would have these dogs kind of underneath a different type of training. If I was me, I would do this." So sometime in the afternoon, the warden pulls me aside. He says, "Senior, okay, here's your budget. Go and find the dog that you're going to do." "Scooby?" "What was that?" So anyways, I find myself in Europe, man.
Yeah.
So I go to Europe, and I'm looking for the ultimate shepherd, right? The ultimate Mally. I want a dog that we can have trained differently. And I'll explain what that means later on, right?
Because
yep. There's going to be some people saying, "Oh, that guy doesn't know what he's doing." You're right. I don't. So I've just been deploying these dogs for over a decade now. Mm-hmm. So I get to overseas, and I run into a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem I'm running into is that I'm surrounded by these shepherds and these Mallies, and I'm freaking allergic to them. I'm allergic to dogs, dude. Highly allergic to dogs, right?
Wow.
Sensitivity. And I'm like, this is not going to work for me, dude. I'm going to have to send somebody else over here. So this, one of my counterparts in Germany says, "Garcia," with his heavy German accent, "have you heard of the Reichen Schnauzer?" I'm like, "The who? The what? The Reichen Schnauzer, right?" And I'm like, "Okay, I talk to you, Hans, and I need to have subtitles when you're talking, dude. Okay, slow down, chill me." So he opens his office. He comes in. He points this poster with this dog with the beard. I'm like, "Now that is an intimidating dog."
Yeah.
"What is that?" He goes, "The Reichen Schnauzer." So he gives me his German. Like, "Oh, okay, Schnauzer, giant Schnauzer. Look like a Schnauzer." He goes, "Yeah." So he gives me a name of a counterpart that he has in Hungary. So I get the opportunity to go to the Hungarian prison service. I look over there, and I go to the border police over there. I'm like, "Wow, those are some big ass dogs." Mm-hmm. Long story short, I come back to the United States after about 6 weeks, and about a month and a half later, we're getting our first giant Schnauzer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Wow, dude. Okay. So you know what? I'm going to tell you this. I had zero experience with canines. Zero experience. I'm not a trainer. Yeah. I don't profess to be a master, triple golden ribbon, kennel master, dog instructor, guru, whatever. You know these guys on Instagram now, right? Uh-huh. So I'm just an operator, man. I'm a team leader. So I said, I go to a police academy to take our dog. We go through the program and we bring him inside the prison. And I'm like, this is a failure. Mm. And the reason why is that the police world, that's a specific type of job that the dogs need to run, right? But inside the prison, here's what you know, and as well as I do, right? We're surrounded by inmates. Inmates heckle the dogs. Inmates will throw things at the dogs. I mean, our team responds all over the country, and we only primarily go into the most the maximum security facilities, violent facilities. I mean, the most violent prison system in the world is in the U.S., and that's nothing to brag about. Trust me, dude. I mean, along our southern borders, we have facilities that are filled with cartel members. You go north or east, you have MS-13, you have the Russian mafia. I mean, you go to the West Coast and you have the Hispanic gangs galore, right? And it's violent. You go down south, you have the Jamaican posse, you have a number of different groups and organizations, Aryan Brotherhood, etc. And so the dog, I wouldn't say is a failure. I'd say the dog was calibrated for the streets rather than the prisons. So the dog would come in and want to bite everybody. The dog would want to do this and just kind of like, this is not going to work. So I go back and I see some trainers and I said, hey, I have this project. Can you help me with? And I had a police guy. I'll never forget this, right? I'll never forget it. This really nice guy. And he was the canine trainer, the director of their program. He says, well, there's no such thing as a program like that for corrections. Number one. Number two, to do what you're asking to do, good luck, because you're not going to find it. What were some of your requirements, you might ask? One, our dog had to be 98 to 99% bark free. Two, our dog had to be off lead at all times, no matter what. Okay, because we have seen dogs deployed in the United States inside of facilities where it would still be on a lead. And we have inmates that have stepped on those leads or grabbed those leads. We've seen dogs thrown over rails. We have inmates that would wrap their arms with blankets, as you know, wait for the dog to hit, okay? And then take that dog and maybe its cellmate might take one of the doors and slam the door shut on the dog, breaking its hips. Mm-hmm. We've seen dogs slung into bunk beds, walls. And man, there's a number of things that we need. The other thing that we discovered was this. It's a firm missile, right? For the most part. So if we deploy our dogs into a riot, how does that dog know what guy to hit? I don't know. Nobody ever told me. Well, it's kind of funny because I had some friends on special operation teams in the military, and I ran into a good friend. I won't give away too much other than to tell you that he hinted that they were working on lasers and guiding their dogs for searching for bombs. Mm-hmm. And he belongs to a highly tier one team. I was like, oh, can I get more information on that? He says, man, I love you, but no. I said, okay. He goes, but if I was going to do it, this was some of the things that I would do. So I contacted a friend that was, their company was manufacturing what they call the SE-532 green laser. It was the brightest handheld green laser at the time in 2010, right? And there was only one company in the United States making it. So long story short, I had all these specifications. And so we had our dog go through a number of things, okay? Extreme obedience. So what we basically did was I needed my dog to learn a certain skill set in ring sport. I needed my dog to learn a certain skill set in searching. So we have, we sent our dog to sheep herding school. People say, what? Yep, we sent him to sheep herding school, and we sent him for a specific skill set, right? Because in a big rec yard with 200 inmates, I send my dog, and my dog knows how to herd people, right? So he'll bark when he needs to bark, and he'll push crowds or what have you. And so our dogs have multiple skill sets to include, they go through EOD, and they go through narcotics. So they go through explosive detection, they go through narcotics, and people say, BS, dude, there's no way you can train a dog in those two principles. Oh, really? Okay. So I'm the guy, right? Yeah. That you can tell me no, but I'm going to ask a buddy of mine who might know somebody or a specialist and say, hey, can you train my dog here in this? Oh, sure. No problem. So I went to an EOD specialist, detection specialist, and they did that. Mm-hmm. Then I went across the country and sent my dog to narcotics school. I said, can you train my dog to do this? But when he alerts, this is what I need him to do. I need him to be passive, and I need him to sit. That's all I need him to do. Just sit. I went back to the EOD guy, right? I went to the EOD guys and I said, my specification is this. Our dog has to be in the down position no matter what. EOD, down position, no matter what. So what we did was, when my dogs, if our dogs find a bomb, or the primary reason why we use our dogs for EOD inside the prisons is for black powder and smokeless powder, bullets. Okay. Cause inmates will throw guns over, throw bullets over. We've seen it time and time again. Or on high risk transports, we set our dog up at the entry. So if we're in the emergency room, our guys will be, you know, where the inmates being taken care of. I'll set my dog at the entry. And so if you've heard of the vapor wake, right? If you're walking in, your body's obviously exuding odors. So if you've got a gun on you, what have you, the dog's going to smell that black powder, smokeless powder. As soon as my dog starts tracking you from a distance, like starts walking behind you, yep. I have probable cause to challenge you immediately, right? And so to do that is something that wasn't even thought of 12 years ago. To have our dogs trained with the laser 12 years ago was a joke, right? People say, no way that can happen. Why do you primarily use the lasers? Because in a riot, I want to send my dog to where the violence is at, but it maybe I might need a specific person needs to go to. So I'll use a bright light. So my dog, it gets my dog's focus. My dog knows, okay, that's the general direction. And then I put the green laser. Once my dog sees the green laser, then I do the canine away, one away, two away, three away, right? Yeah. So we'll send our canines. And so our canine will hit that target. And my guys, when they come in, they all have red lasers. I have a green laser. And the reason why I have the green laser, so everybody knows there's a canine on that target. So do not shoot. So the other thing that we do is that we trained our dogs to only hit. And so that's why we kind of went to the ring sport, right? Yeah. We wanted our dogs to primarily bite lower extremities only. Because you think about it, if my dog jumps up to the arms, so you can flagger your arms all you want. My dog's just going to look at you and say, that's nice. And that looks delicious, but I prefer the meat, right?
Yeah.
So he's going to go for the lower extremities because our dogs are going to hit you in the Achilles, behind the kneecap, or in the testicles. Those are three areas they're going to hit you because that's where I'm going to target. Yeah. But the primary reason why we do that is so that if our dog jumps up, if you can imagine, I have got six or seven guys, we're pointing our weapons downrange to shoot. Mm-hmm. If my dog jumps up, there's a high probability that our dog could get shot, right? So that's why we want our dogs to go low. And yeah. And 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10, mm-hmm. the suspect or the inmates never see the laser. They just see a dog coming at them. So they're standing there and waving their arms up, right? Thinking that the dog's going to hit the arms, and our dog hits them right where it counts, man. Wham, and bowls them over. And so the other thing that we did 10 years ago, 12 years ago, okay, I was laughed at. They called my dog Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of canine handlers, they were just joking at me. They go, why do you put lights in your dogs? And I said, I know, man, it's just like a billboard. He goes, man, you know, you want your dog to be stealthy when he goes in. I go, well, that might be true on the streets, mm-hmm. but inside of a prison, I need everybody to see my dog. Don't come near my dog. So we have lights in our dogs. So I went to Core Survival and I said, I need the light sequence that goes, I can switch it from red to blue to green, right? Yep. And so red means that my dog is hot. So he's operationally ready to go. Don't come near him. If I go blue, he's in a working condition right now. So we're responding. If it's green, hey, my dog is social. So we're good, right? Yep. And you could call him schizophrenic. So I'll change his lights according to his attitude as well. So, but seriously, the lights were primarily used for so that our guys downrange, as you know, working in a prison in a rec yard or internal mm-hmm. rec yard or external rec yard, if it's low light or somewhat inside, I need my guys to see this dog coming from whatever distance it comes from, because they know, hey, canine away. So that dog is rolling. Yeah. And so that's why we started using lights. And here we are, Lord and behold, what you see on Instagram and all these videos, dogs using mm-hmm. lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's awesome, you know, and, you know, just hearing this and you know, having this conversation about, you know, let's just say 10, 12 years ago. And that's why I wanted to just circle back a little bit. And I know that you've touched on it, but, you know, the perception of the industry at that particular time, you know,
oh, yeah.
laughed at, you know, probably, you know, belittled completely, you know, all the time, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, number one, you've got a dog that is outside the German Shepherd, the Malinois, the Doberman box, and your criteria that you felt that you know was more than what a lot could provide, you know. So
well, the funny thing is the criteria, right? For dogs, our dogs average between 104 and 124 pounds on average, our giant schnauzers. Yep. And if you notice, most Malleys are probably in a 65 to 70 pound categories because look, the Malleys and the Sheps let me just speak for the Malleys. The Malleys and the Dutchies are like the Swiss Army knife, man. They're like the gold standard in the industry. Mm-hmm. They're proven. They're a great dog. They're very smart, but they're also very neurotic sometimes, dude. All right. Very intense, right? Mm-hmm. The giant schnauzer, the specification on giant schnauzer was the biggest thing was their temperament, man. They can go from 0 to 100 miles an hour and then instantly go back down to 50 miles an hour, because inside of a prison, as you know, right, a correction facility, you might have to respond to one housing unit because you might have a medical response. And then immediately after that, you respond to a cell extraction. And then after that, it could be a gang fight in another facility, whether it's a female facility or a male facility. You know, it's a mini city on the inside. And so our dogs don't have the luxury of getting back into a vehicle and then driving off to cool down. Mm-hmm. Our dogs are constantly working, right? Mm-hmm. And so the temperament the intelligence level on a giant schnauzer. And again, I don't care what kind of dog you own. Mm-hmm. It could be a King Corso. It could be a Beagle, a mini schnauzer. It could be a Frenchie. It doesn't matter. They're great dogs. They all have their special attributes. But what we really found special about the giant schnauzer is their intelligence level. It's like I call them the dog with the human brain. Okay, mm-hmm. Only because they really study your facial features. They study your body language. They study your voice, and then they're like your shadow. Mm-hmm. Don't go anywhere. Wherever you go, they go. It's just we call them the dark shadows, right? Mm-hmm. And then they have a beard, which makes them look pretty badass, dude. No matter what, right?
Yeah.
For so sure. I mean, but the specification that we needed a dog with more size, because if you can imagine a 300-pound guy or 250-pound inmate who's lifting weights, they wrap their arms with a blanket. They're waiting for that, and that's one of the things that you see on Instagram. Mm-hmm. If you look at the majority of dogs, the way they're trained to hit to the arms. Everything's upper body, upper torso. You know, you see all these decoys out there. What do you think the inmates watch, dude? I mean. So we've done that. We've been running dogs at lower extremities for over a decade. And because we've learned, we've had dogs seriously hurt and injured very bad from practicing traditional methods of deploying our dog.
Sure. And I wanted to touch on, for those of you Aussie listeners or, you know, in the UK, you know, 105 to 125 pounds. So you're looking at anywhere from 47 kilos to 57 kilos per dog, you know. So certainly, you know, not a small 30, 32 kilo Malinois.
Yeah. And they're definitely not easy to carry. Especially with all the kit and equipment that we run. That is one of the reasons. And, you know, our dogs are mission specific for us. I'm sure if I was on in Afghanistan, you know, working with other teams, I'd probably prefer a smaller dog. Mm-hmm. Only because of numbers of things that we do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for us in our environment, these dogs are really built for the inside. They're built to handle that kind of horsepower. Mm-hmm. Example, our dogs average between anywhere between 290 and 405 on PSI bite. And so people might say, yeah, that's true. That's good. But how do you know, right? How do you know? So I'm going to let your audience and you into a little technology that we've been using now for 8 years. Mm-hmm. When our dogs first come because I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of a development and something that's going to be coming out soon. When our dogs first come into our unit at 8 weeks old, we do what we call a bite pressure test on them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So NASA had a technology that they use that they implemented to know what the G's are on the human body for the astronauts when they took off in the space shuttle. Okay. And it was a special system, like a pad that goes into the seats of the space shuttle. And so when that rocket takes off, that there's a lot of G's pressing down into that seat. And so NASA is able to check basically how many G's, true G's, that the human, that astronaut's feeling, right? And so there's other components, other apps that they have, but they have a meter in the seats. My brother used to work for NASA, so this is how I kind of landed it. So about 7 years ago, certain technology became available, right? Except the University of Georgia was looking for, you know, other methods of other projects, I should say, to how to adapt this technology for the commercial market. I happen to be at the right place at the wrong time, or the wrong time at the right place, whatever you, however you want to say it, right? And you know me, man, I kind of have this thing where if I see a technology, if it applies to us or if it can apply to us, I'll try it. So this technology was amazing. And I said, is there any way possible that you guys would be willing to work with us? And I remember speaking with the doctor who was in charge and with the team that was in charge. And I said, you know what? We've never thought about that, but that would be a great idea. Can I put that technology in bike pads?
Yep.
Can I put it inside of a sleeve and arm? They said, absolutely. Do we have an app for it? Says, as a matter of fact, right now it's wired, but we can make an app for you. So I'm the guy who learned how to put pressure sensors into arm sleeves and into bike pillows and into puppy training sleeves. And what we did was, for the first year, it was very top secret. And then certain agencies, certain teams, we started letting them know what we were doing. And what that did for us was this. I knew that when a puppy came in, it was biting roughly at 30 PSI or 40 PSI. And so we teach our dogs how to bite. We teach our dogs, hey, that's a strong bite. I'm not looking for a strong bite. I'm not looking for, you know, that's a solid bite. We're looking for a bite that not only is a solid bite, but a dog that can hang on to a bite for a great deal of time. Because once you start wiggling that arm up and down, not the Instagram, hey, let me just move this dog left and right. We're talking, I want to take that arm and shove that arm up in the air and bring that dog down. Will that dog still hold on to it? And so what we developed was a program. So each week we gauged our puppies' bites from the time that they're 8 weeks old to the time that they leave us. Every week we have a criteria of measuring our dog's bite. And you know what that does? It allows us to work on specific workouts. Example, if I want to increase my dog's bite strength, I know that I need to increase his neck strength as well. So we might do hanging pillows off the ground, and we'll do maybe at first when a puppy is new, we might do 20 second holds, and then we'll do 30 second holds, and then we'll do another set with 40 second holds. And that might be the first workout. Then the next workout we'll do 20 second holds now with a swing, you know, where we're rocking him, and then 30 second, then 40 second holds, and then with a swing. And so you'll notice that the dog's neck strength starts increasing. You'll notice that he starts to learn how to control his body. You'll notice that we start putting him on a swing on maybe the third round or third exercise, where we put him on a swing now. Now we put some bungee to it because we really want to see him move his neck, thrashing it down. So we put how many PSI he's pressing on the pad, and then how much he's pulling down. And our program, believe it or not, and we're just corrections guys, but it's very scientific. I've had teams from all over the world come and train with us. And you'll see that if you look at our giant schnauzers, which I know you have, you'll notice that our dogs come from only a handful of places throughout Eastern Europe, number one. Number two, their necks are abnormally big, very powerful. If you look at the giant schnauzer, we prefer a dog. Well, the specification we have is that the dog has hair and not fur. So your Sheps and your Malleys, and it's a debate, right? People say, no, all dogs have fur. Okay, whatever. But from what I was told, what my hairdresser told me, I'm kidding, not my hairdresser. I use a barber. Is that from the vets, is that dogs with furs are like your Sheps, your Malleys, and others, okay? You'll notice that if you walk behind a Shepherd or Mallee, you'll have a fur coat by the end of the week, okay? If you walk behind a giant schnauzer, you might get a handful of hair in a month, okay? But that's just like you and I. I mean, you shed, I shed, because we have hair. Hair is just follicles that come out. So that's really a big difference with those dogs. But the second thing is, if you look at the giant schnauzer's mouth versus a Mallee's mouth, yep. if you look at the Mallee's mouth, when he opens that mouth, it's like a nice big V shape, right? A nice V shape. Mm-hmm. When you look at a giant schnauzer, it's almost like a C clamp. They use a lot of their pressure from the back end of that mouth really hard. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of specification differences of why we also selected the giant schnauzer. You know, besides it having a beard and looking cool and badass, it is just one beautiful, intelligent dog. It's got the automatic, the protection built into it, the loyalty. They're just amazing dogs. I mean, I'm sure if I ever ran dogs again in the future, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't know anything about the giant schnauzer, I'm sure the Mallees would have been our selection process like anybody else, because if the SEALs and Delta and SAS are all using them, mm-hmm. you know, they gotta be, if it's good enough for them, they gotta be good enough for us. But honestly, because we work in a corrections environment, the giant schnauzer really became the main dogs for us. But that'll kind of give you some little bit of openers for you to now yeah. ask your questions, man. We're doing some scientific stuff that people are like, no way, yeah way. We're yeah. doing some crazy things.
Yeah, yeah, and I love it. And I'm so geeky as well, you know, like I just, you know, at the moment working on, obviously, you know, Dogs and Deadlifts, we have, you know, a number of different programs, but, you know, especially around performance, conditioning, et cetera, you know, heart rate yeah. monitoring, you know, getting our conditioning mm-hmm. programs to the exact, you know, we using pre-workouts, but, you know, supplementations, you know, pre, mm-hmm. post, you know, these things we're going to talk about hopefully very soon, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but before we do, so the puppies come to you at 8 weeks old. Are you breeding internally? Or are you still external?
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. We don't breed at all. Yeah. So we bring our dogs from one of three kennels in the world. Mm-hmm. These are known as Luftung Reiche Schnauzers. They're known as high performance Reiche Schnauzers. Mm-hmm. One of our kennels are located in Eastern Europe that they still use a fax machine to contact us, okay, or phone that's connected to a wall. But when you go on to their kennels, it's probably about 120 acres. It is pristine and immaculate, and all they do is raise giant schnauzers for primarily military, border police, for agencies, and that's primarily it. They do sell outside to civilians, but on a very limited basis. And so we use one of three, but we'll also open that up and we will go to what we call beta suppliers. So a beta supplier might be somebody that we might've gotten a dog one time through and that's okay. It worked really well for us, you know, because one in six dogs only make it through our program. It's almost 3 years, mm-hmm. one in six dogs. And when you're putting in almost $10,000 a month on a dog for training, it's not cheap, man. So our dogs have the best in medical care. They have the best in from nutrition to we don't have one trainer. We have a variety of specialists. That's what we like to call them. Yeah. But the kennels that we use when we bring a dog in, let's say kennel A, kennel B, and kennel C, we name them all the same. They're all a Max, or they're all a Frank, or they're all whatever it is, right? When they're coming in, because we don't know which dog is going to make it through the program. We hope this dog is going to make it through the program. Our beta testing tells us they're going to make it through the program, but that's so that one kennel can't sit there and say, oh, that's our dog. No, all of our primary suppliers sign NDAs with us. So if someone says, hey, I supplied that bloke with, did I say that right? That bloke, you guys use that word down there? Yeah, bloke? Yeah, or yeah, okay. Yeah. For our American guys, it's called that dude, that guy, right?
That's so, right.
So for our English friends across the pond, I'm trying to take you guys into it. Yeah. So that one kennel can't just say that, hey, we supply those guys or those dudes with our dogs. And we do that for security reasons as well. Mm-hmm. But it's really important that we try to stay away. And this is one thing that I tell people, if you want a giant schnauzer, they're great dogs. But you have to be very careful because there's a lot of backyard breeders. And there are a lot of people that have been saying, you know, that kind of go out there and say, yeah, we have the same dogs as that team does over there. I mean, if you look online for giant schnauzer, we're the most famous giant schnauzer handler in the world. and it's not, I don't take that lightly, but I also want to be responsible and tell people that look, for the first year, you've got a basically a big child in your room, and these guys are knuckleheads. You know, if you want to know who's going to make you a liar out of you, your dogs, at least for the first year, 1 minute, they're great. The next minute, what they just practiced, they forgot. And you're like, what the hell? Right. So, but I love those. I love the giant schnauzers. My wife, man, she's amazing. She's amazing with them as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So when you get them, you know, 8 weeks old, do they go to team guys or foster carers or?
Yeah, no, man, we don't do any of that. The dogs come internally. Once we bring them in from overseas, they come in internally and then they go through what they call an in-doc process. Mm-hmm. And so the in-doc process takes about 14 to 21 days, mm-hmm. which means they come in, we do a final beta testing. So right when they get off that airplane, out of Washington, D.C., we pick them up. They come in either from Washington, D.C., or they're coming through Atlanta or New York City, one of the U.S. imports for us, the customs. Once they come in, we immediately, within probably 12 hours, we take them through what we call a beta testing. Mm-hmm. And one of the tests that we run, and I guess I would challenge anybody to kind of say, my dog can meet that program. Yeah, I'm sure they can. But one of the beta testings that we run with our dogs is we put them in a big concrete room. And so we might use like an inmate cafeteria inside the facility, right? So you know how big that is, right?
Yep.
We run a test where we take multiple shotguns, we fire multiple rounds, and we set targets downrange for them and see if they go to it. And if you watch some of our videos very closely, you'll see some of the testing that we do. It's super fast because we don't know what the general public, you know, they're like, oh, you're cruel to those dogs. But the truth is we've been doing it for such a long time that we always have vet staff on premises whenever we beta test a dog, because you don't want to hurt a dog. You don't want to break a dog. And if a dog doesn't pass that phase for us, then we go into, we do secondary tests just to check. Mm-hmm. And then we might say, do we really want to run this dog through the program, or is this dog going to, is it track going to go through what we call the PSD school, right? Mm-hmm. Personal Security Detail School. And so 9 times out of 10, the dogs that come in for us, it's very rare that a dog will not make it through the beta testing, because there's something that we do with our dogs. It's still classified now. Mm-hmm. From the time that they're 2 weeks old, we have the breeder do some very specific things environmentally for that dog to make sure that the dogs all go through an environmentally testing. And so as each dog maybe might fail or show a little weakness, that dog is pulled out. And so at the end, they tell us either I'll go overseas or I'll send a counterpart overseas. And the dogs that's left after about 8 weeks from the environmentals that is going on, they'll say, these are the 3 dogs that are left. And what do you go ahead and do your test now. So sometimes we'll come back with 2 dogs. Sometimes we'll come back and ship 4 dogs, you know, back with the 3, with the multiple kennels that we run. Yep. So when they come in, they go in through the in-doc process. That's where they have the ear cut and the tail doc. I mean, who needs ears and tail, right? So people say, man.
Well, you're not in Australia. Down here, they all have.
Yeah. Well, depending on the ears, I mean, do you really want to listen to our political leaders nowadays? No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to go political on men. The bottom line is this. People say, you are absolutely horrid, Garcia, or Senior. I mean, come on, man. You're cutting these dogs' ears and you're cutting their tails off and their dew claws. I said, yeah, absolutely. But we're doing it for the dog's safety, right? Mm-hmm. So if you see, there used to be a movie. I don't know how old you are, mm-hmm. but rumor has it, there used to be a show called The Flying Nun, right? I don't know if you remember that show. Look it up later on, Google it. It's called The Flying Nun. Okay. She had this hat that had these big dog ears on. And it was the typical Roman Catholic nun from back in the 50s and 60s, okay? And yep. she flies around on this hat that looks like a big schnauzer ears. I mean, check it out, man, right?
Yep.
So let's get back to reality here. For the dog safety, inmates are vicious and brutal. We've seen dogs with ears. Inmates take the ears and rip off ears. We've seen dogs cut up really bad. So our dogs have a very unique specification on the dog's ears. When our dogs go into a situation, we might use the Dark Systems new helmet that they have. Mm-hmm. And if we do, we might use the ear protection, or if our dogs have other protection devices, we might run it on them. So we have a neoprene system that we put on them, so it really covers their head. Mm-hmm. But if we don't use any type of protection for their ears, then we grease their ears down. Always grease their ears down. So that if somebody goes to grab it, they slip right off anyways. Yeah. So it's like helping our dog, you know, in the fight. It's like kind of like that Rocky thing, right? Grease them up in the eyes and everything else. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then for the tail, we've seen inmates tag team dogs and rip the tails off, break the tails, slam the tails between the doors. We've seen dogs brutalized. Thank God, not none of our dogs, but we've seen other facilities we've gone to who run the Shepherds and the Malleys. Mm-hmm. And we've seen dogs get broken up and like, what happened to that dog? He's got a messed up looking tail. Yeah. Inmate cut it off or cut halfway off, amputated half their tail, or that dog has a missing ear. I'm like, that's horrible what goes on. And so years ago, we learned this, right? Because if you think about it, in the United States, our giant schnauzers are the only tier one active giant schnauzers that have some serious combat time or deployment time, interdiction time, than any other schnauzer in the world. And that's really what makes our guys, we say they're operationally tested and they're battle proven, right? And I don't like to use that as bragging rights, because every dog that we deploy, man, you know, it is one of the hardest things to watch dog really get hurt inside of an operation. And inside of a prison, it is a violent, very brutal environment. It can go, as you know, right, because you're experienced, it can go from everything's hunky-dory, everything's lovely, everything's nice, right? Hey, I used that right. I used that word right, lovely, yeah, right? Yeah, you guys use that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it could be lovely right now, okay? to going to freaking pure mayhem. Instantly, it's like, what are we dealing with? Well, we're dealing with a lot of psycho inmates now, or inmates on medication, mentally ill, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that violence turns towards us. And I have to remember this, and this is something that we always tell our guys, is that it's always boots. I mean, it's always paws before boots. I try to mitigate the safety or situation by sending our canines before I send in personnel, or we send things downrange, okay, that come out of these kinetic energy deployment systems. I don't know if I can say guns in your on this podcast, but we carry fine. A lot of guns.
Certainly fine.
Yeah. So I don't know if I got off track, but we that's what makes our dogs. So in this in-doc process, look at that, mm-hmm. all that in-doc, mm-hmm. Our dogs will spend 21 days. Mm-hmm. We have fun. They play. They get their ears, their tail, their dew claws. And then once they come out of that, they're healed and everything's good to go, then they go away to their first training session. And their first training session could be obedience for 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. Then they come back to us for beta testing. So where we see what they've learned, and then we beta test it inside of the prisons, right? Mm-hmm. So they get a chance to see, you know, and feel and smell what goes on inside the prisons. And then they stay with us for about 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. and then they go away again. And so the next one might be extreme obedience or off lead. And then it goes into the other skill sets all the way to air operations. It goes into hostage rescue, laser guiding. They can go to ring sport. They go to cadaver school. They'll go to herding school. So this happens for 3 years, dude. And so you could imagine the amount of time that they spend in training. But every 8 to 12 weeks, they come back to us, you know, at headquarters with the main handlers. So there's always that bonding process. It's a very, very, I mean, we have that pipeline so dialed in, it's not even funny. Yeah. So whenever we get into the fitness and things like that, I'll share some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what I just wanted to sort of to lead down that road now in regards to, let's just say, you know, they've had 2 to 3 years of intense training, you know, obviously, just like us, they need to be well prepared to for that day that they, all right, we're going operational today. Congratulations. you're good to go.
yeah.
So are they generally, are you for that, before we move in, are they paired up with a new team member, an existing team member, or is it a variety?
So if we have if we have our team of, let's say, 12 guys or 18 guys, 12 of them are all handlers. All of our operators have to go through what we call handler school, no matter what. And so our dogs come to us plug and play already, literally plug and play. So we try to go into a situation with a minimum of 3 to 4 dogs. Our dogs know 5 different languages, whether it's Hebrew, French, German, Czech, and then English or Spanish, right? And so you say, well, why do you teach your dogs, you know, 5 different languages? Because if I'm running with 4 other handlers, we're all not going to be yelling German or Czech, you know, plots or stop or halt, or whatever. Because then all the dogs like, Scooby, and they all stop. So we calibrate our dogs based on the situation. And then usually I'm speaking Hebrew or French to my dog, right? And the chicks dig it. So just so you know that, and you speak French with an American accent, but don't tell my wife that because she'll kick my ass. Anyways, but I'm kidding. My wife rides me hard, man. Like, you are such a nut. But well, you know, those are just some of the skill sets that our dogs are taught. And and people say, your dogs are so intense. Yeah, they are. But at the same time, you know, our dogs go back with their handlers, so they stay at their home. We have kennels at the base. Our vehicles, I think I've sent you some pictures and things like that, so you can see some of the stuff that we do. But everything is designed and always complemented with our canines in mind, right? Whether it's our trucks, whether it's our tractor trailers, whether it's our impact dog crates we're using. You know, we're always thinking about these dogs and keeping them in their transport low level stress as much as possible.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, on a regular basis, I know that I've got some notes. Let's talk about, you know, fitness and conditioning, you know, because, sure. You know, as a, you know, a tier one team, you know, you can't be, overweight, both the handler, but also the canine. They need to perform, you know, instantly, you know. So let's talk about
EOD, babe. on demand.
That's great. So let's, you know, let's talk about preparation and, you know, I suppose, when does that start, or when, you know, how does that look like on a week to week, monthly type basis? Obviously you spoke about same skill set, but different terminology, like your spring pole, you know, your bike pillow, your hanging, you know, develop bike grip and things like that. You know, I start, you know, whether it be puppies or, you know, in part of my fitness training program, that, you know, spring pole, love it, you know, absolutely love it. But what, you know, let's talk about, you know, the conditioning aspects for the dogs.
Well, besides the dogs eating McDonald's or Burger King, you know, I'm kidding. Let me just talk about the, how we keep our dogs in the shape that we do. Yeah. For example, we don't like to run the same exercise on dog day in and day out, right? Dogs need activity, as well as I have to look at the conditioning of our dog. And if you think about your canine, or at least I do, I think in the mindset of do you guys have the Spartan races down there in Australia?
Yeah, indeed we do. Love them.
Okay. So you know, the people who do the Spartan races, dude, those are some of the most physically badass people that are in amazing shape. I mean, they're like the CrossFit guys, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I want to make sure our dogs are in that kind of shape. And people think, you know, your dog is going to sit there and just do all the biting. But what we'd like to do is our dogs have what we call fight sessions. Mm-hmm. And when we say fight sessions, and I'll just kind of give you what one of the routines that we run, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the routines that we run is we don't ever use just a single decoy. We usually have 2 or 3 decoys, right? And so, like, the first decoy, what his job is to do is to primarily, we have an obstacle course that we run, and his job is to, no matter what he does, do not get bit. Period. He runs. Mm-hmm. He'll do whatever it takes, and he's going to make that dog jump over obstacles, go in and out of vehicles. He makes it very difficult. Okay. And before the dog actually hits him, we recall that dog, and we send that dog to what we call the fighter. Mm-hmm. And so that dog will go to the decoy and the fighter, what we call him in the fight box, the battle box that we have. Mm-hmm. And our decoys have gloves on. So when that dog hits him, that dog's getting punched. and he's getting worked on and he's getting a lot of pressure. He's getting water pushed in his face and he's getting punched. Then that dog's going to come out of that battle box. And then we're going to harness him up with a 45-pound drag bag. And he's going to run 100 yards to the other decoy that we have downrange. Right. Mm-hmm. And when he gets that other, he's going to go ahead and do what we call a unannounced time, unknown fight amount, right? Mm-hmm. So that dog's going to be on that decoy while pulling a 45-pound bag. Mm-hmm. After that time, it's usually about 2 to 2.5, 3 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And so somebody might say, well, what kind of fight are you giving that dog? Well, that dog's primarily going to be biting the legs, but you really have to know what it feels like to for a dog to be on your legs and then that dog to experience the getting kicked, right? Mm-hmm. Getting kicked in the head, getting hit in the head. And then at this point, what we do is we take the bag off the dog and we connect up a parachute to him. And he's going to run 100 yards back to chase a decoy. Mm-hmm. And he's chasing a decoy through an obstacle course, right? So he's going to run 100 yards with that parachute. Once he gets to that line, we're going to take off that parachute and he's going to run and chase the rabbit, right? Which is mm-hmm. And we have some small, scrawny dudes who can run in and out of vans, in and out of vehicles, in and out of houses. And I mean run, especially when you know that they have hidden suits on. So these boys can really move. Yep. It makes it very difficult for the dog. But what we've done there is develop their cardio, mm-hmm. their mental focus, their recall, discipline and obedience out of it, mm-hmm. and the physical toughness. That is what we call a bite session for us. Mm-hmm. And we'll run two sessions that day. We'll run a morning session. And then in the afternoon, if we're going to run, it's a fight day session. Mm-hmm. What we really work on for the dog from that perspective is in the afternoon might be a fight that lasts 15 minutes, mm-hmm. 3 decoys or 4 decoys, 5 minutes on this decoy, 5 minutes on the next decoy, 5 minutes on the next decoy. One's in water, one's in on sand, we're in mattresses, and we have these air horns constantly going off on him. And then he moves into maybe slick floors. So the both decoy and the dog is on slick floors. And then we finally put a muzzle on him, and then he'll finish off the last 5 minutes with a muzzle fight. Nothing but pure, unadulterated muzzle fighting. Mm-hmm. That is his 20-minute session in the afternoon. Now, you can... If any of your people think that that's easy, try that routine. Yeah. It's a smoker, dude. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see our dogs with big chests, big necks. I mean, basically, it's that Spartan mindset and mentality. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I like that you talk about is really developing the dogs, and what we've been getting more into is that dog on their like sled pulls, really, really developing the lower extremities, you know, the total body package. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why we do a lot of, we're starting now to do a lot of bungee work out mm-hmm. there with our mm-hmm. dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think, and I've developed, been working on, you know, playing around with programs as well, whether it be bungees via isometric holds or, you know, dynamic plyometrics as well, you know, so, sure. You know, there's a heap of stuff that has come, you know, I've been experimenting over a little while, but, you know, it just hasn't quite hit the mainstream yet, but the benefits, but also being able to prove the benefits scientifically as well, sure. is very hard at the moment, you know, over the last 12 months, you know, I've been talking to a number of people around the world. And like I said, just being able to, you know, your fight day sounds very much like my red day. My red day is, you know, where we're looking anywhere between intensity levels between 8 to 10. That's a red day for me, or a red training session. Yeah. So, you know, we're working at the maximum, sort of almost maximum thresholds. Whereas, you know, a green day is, you know, recovery type sessions. You know, it might be nice and easy, low level recovery. Like I said, it might be a sled pulls, it might be walk, it might be hydrotherapy, treadmills and things like that, you know. So
sure.
Doing back-to-back red days for the, you know, let's talk about general population, or, you know, a lot of dogs that aren't quite conditioned to it. They're not going to get through it without injury or some sort of burnout neurologically as well, right?
Well, one of the things that you touched on, and I heard from your last podcast that really I haven't heard very many places, is that they take you have to take safety of the dog into a like, we don't just get started on an exercise. We actually like to go through a warm-up phase with our dogs, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really important for us. And if you don't know how to warm your dog up, stretch your dog out, you could actually end up hurting your dog. And And that's something that we tell everybody. So we have our vet techs on spot. We actually once a month we'll take our dog to a chiropractor. A dog chiropractor, yeah. Just because hips are really important. Back is really important. Our dogs take a beating on a regular basis. And that's mm-hmm. something that I really push hard. For example, once our dogs are finished a high extreme output session, it doesn't matter what it is, cardio, mm-hmm. Muscle, whatever they do. We put them underneath cool running fans, but they don't get any water for at least 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we do that is so that we are trying to avoid any bloating that happens with some dogs. You have to be really careful because you can give your dog too much water and then your dog gets bloated. So we're very, very cautious about doing things like that. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, once again, I've mentioned on a number of podcasts, but some time ago, the benefits of a recovery type, not necessarily, primarily fat based, you know, and I use it as a drink within 15 to 20 minutes of once the dog has completed the exercise, you know. So right. I've got this like recovery shaker that I make up,
right?
Around the 15 to 20 minute mark, we want to make sure that we replenish, those muscles and that system after a workout as well. So, you know, recovery driven performance is super important as well, you know, and that's where your massages, your rub downs, your chiropractors and things like that come in. And I know that if I have a little tweak or a little bit of a muscle soreness, where do I go?
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't, well, I think a lot of handlers mm-hmm. that I've seen, they don't really, I don't know anybody that really talks about or spends as much time on both the post-workout, the pre-workout for canines. They just kind of, and I see it right now, right, with handlers, mm-hmm. they work the hell out of their dogs out, they throw them in the vehicle and that's it, we're done for the day. Mm-hmm. But what they don't realize is that dogs get sore, dogs mm-hmm. hurt, dogs feel the same pain. If you're really working your dog out, we document everything with our dogs. So one of the things that we do for us, no matter what, and even probably till the day that they die, leave this earth, our dogs drink only filtered water. That's all they drink. And the reason why they do that is because we travel all over the world on a regular basis. And so we want to keep it consistent what they're drinking, number one. Number two, what people don't realize that's in the regular general public water, like a lot of the chlorine, a lot of the other things that are in there. We're really careful because that can really affect your dog's, you know, his pH balance. That can affect the dog, you know, going from zero to hero really quickly. So we watch our dog cycle, right? So we kind of know, I because of the nutrition that we feed them, you know, their probiotics that we give them, their stool samples are tested on a regular basis. And we just have to, these are high performance dogs. So even if your dog doesn't do what our dogs do, I think as a good responsible handler, everybody should take into account that if you have a canine that you're training or that you're using for sport, or even it's a domestic pet, right? It doesn't matter. You should still take the appropriate care to work them out properly. Give them the nutrition that they need, because it's just like another human being. Well, he needs a partner, right?
Yep.
All my canines are partners, and I treat them just like that. And so shows like yours give a lot of great information to people like us. And that's what kind of got me listening to your podcast with some of the good guys that you have out there, giving some pretty good information.
And I think, you know, just on that, I've talked about it previously, stool samples, you know, bloods, from your vet, and just checking baseline, you know, yeah, we could go right down a rabbit hole of, gut health, microbiome, you know, the yep, gut brain exactly. axis, like, oh, you know, it's juicy stuff, you know? However, at the moment, I believe, this is truly what I believe, is people just don't know, right? Even majority of vets or veterinary specialists, are not thinking about this type of stuff. You know, a lot here in Australia.
Do you think it's that they don't know, or could some of it be that, you know what, I really don't give it the serious consideration, or I don't really want to know, right? Mm. Because if you are a responsible handler, isn't it your business? Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, yeah. to to want to have the best for your dog. Mm-hmm. And so shouldn't you kind of open up and think about it, right? Mm-hmm. A dog's gut is really important. What you feed that dog is really important. Mm-hmm. Hell, you ever smell a dog's fart and you go, hey, I know you ate something that definitely wasn't part of that meal today, but whatever it was, it is killing me, man. Because dogs have gas, flagellants, whatever. I don't even know what the Australian term for fart is, but you know, when they pass gas, right? Sometimes I can tell my dog is not in the greatest of conditions right now because it smells like, you know, a mini nuclear bomb that just went off. I'm like, dude, what is going on? And you can just tell your dog's not feeling well, man.
For sure.
So,
I, you know, commonly my brother will say he dropped his guts.
Or he dropped one somewhere and he's just dragging it, man.
For sure, you know, and look, it happened to me only just 8 weeks ago. You know, the dog picked up, you know, the little corn cobs that you know, that KFC and, you know, we were off leash, and he was quick, swallowed it. There was $3,000. Yeah, $3,000 surgery there, right then and there.
Holy crap, dude.
Yeah, got lodged, you know, and it was seconds, you know, and I took my eyes off him for a very short period of time. And next minute, that little corn cob was stuck.
So, which brings me to one of these next things. And that's why one of our schools that we run, right, with our mm-hmm. dogs mm-hmm. is if there's ever going to be a time to train a dog when he's a puppy, train them then mm-hmm. How to ignore things on the ground. I mean, that in itself, our dog goes through a special phase where they throw raw meat on the ground. Mm-hmm. And if a dog tries to pick it up, we zap them. I mean, we really get onto mm-hmm. the dog very quickly. It's part of their obedience mm-hmm. because inmates can do what? They can put poison in meat, throw it down, put mm-hmm. some food down and throw it for the dog. So our dogs are trained to ignore all those types of things. And that should be something that almost every person who has a dog just do some small training like that, an obedient side, to ignore food and foreign objects on the ground. Look, dogs are gonna be dogs, we know that, right? But just to have a little bit of training there would really be helpful.
For sure.
Or, you know,
this is Noah was my personal dog, you know, and he's always pushing the boundaries. He's a 7-year-old German short-haired pointer, and just you know, like I said, I took my eyes off him for a split second and gone, you know. And you know, luckily we've recovered now, and you know, we're almost back to full health and conditioning. But you know, that took time away. You know, if that happened to you, or you know, or let's just say a canine handler, imagine not having a dog operational for 8 weeks or 12 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of money there. Mm-hmm. So I guess the side question is this. Did you say it was KFC?
Yeah, it was KFC. Corn cob.
I bet you that dog doesn't like KFC anymore. No more KFC, buddy.
Well, like I said, I don't even know where it happened to come from, you know, but we were out the front of my house, and we were loading up, and you know, he snaveled it.
Well, that's what I mean. I always see people that feed their dog a bunch of like human food, and I want to say, hey, do you realize your dog can get pancreatitis, or mm-hmm. you know, that's a lot of salt for your dog, and that could shut mm-hmm. your dog's kidneys down. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we've been like the snacks we give our dogs, right? Yep. We use this thing called carnivore crisp. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they're called carnivore crisp, man, mm-hmm. and they're amazing. Jerky. It's about all I can say, right? Yeah. They have like lamb, they have duck, they have all the different types of jerky, and it's the best stuff you've ever had mm-hmm. for humans, but they also make it for dogs as well. But even though, because we don't like to give our dogs anything that has like, you ever seen, go to the store and says, hey, get some of these homemade organic dog biscuits, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at the peanut butter and you go, okay, I can pronounce the word peanut butter, but I can't pronounce all the other 50 other ingredients that's in there. Mm-hmm. Newsflash, that is not organic, right?
That's right.
So that's why I like these things called carnivore crisp, because they only have like three ingredients, right? It's like beef brisket, water, and Redmond salt. That's it. Yeah. Purified water. That's it. Those are the only things I like to put in my dog to keep it natural. So we feed our dogs like a good kibble called something called Taste of the Wild right now. Mm-hmm. And then we supplement it 4 times a week with raw beef. Mm-hmm. So we can't always feed our dogs raw. primarily for a number of reasons, because we're constantly traveling, but we like to offset it, you know, with a consistent meal diet that is like salmon based, fish oil based, and then we put raw, you know, beef or steak, you know, in there, you know, 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah, for sure. For me, you know, if anyone's listening to me, you know, previously, you know, you get sick of, I'm a broken record, right? I'm a broken record. All your performance dogs, or, you know, your home behavioral home pet dogs, it starts with nutrition, you know, 100%, yes. You know, like, don't even think about anything else until you get your nutrition dialed in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, are you running a probiotic for your dog? Do you use any kind of probiotics for your dog?
Yes, I do. I've also got some collagen supplements as well. So,
okay.
Yeah. So,
and where do we get that stuff from?
So I had Narelle Cook on the podcast some episodes ago. I'm happy to link it in the show notes, and I can send it through you as well. She's just started online retail outlet. I'm happy to send the links to her. I believe I used her Gut Restore, and I've got her collagen product as well. So I really really like that. I also have a supporter, you know, I don't like to promote too many, you know, but I've got a supporter called Antinol, and Antinol is fantastic for joints and a number of other things as well, but that's sort of for happy to, you know, they support me very much as well, but I don't like it to be too commercial.
No, because we like to run our dog on probiotics, because gut health is very important for them, and then we use some fish oils on every meal. They get a lot of good fish oils, but the probiotics we use is like something called Canine Nutra. I think it's called Nutribest or something. But it's a great probiotic that we like to run, and depending on where we're at, it can be a good stabilizer, or if a dog is underneath high stress and they kind of have that Montezuma's revenge, a decent probiotic will definitely calm its gut down real quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And I've also been looking at, you know, electrolyte replacements and, you know, a number of that sort of, you know, supplementation on top of, you know, the raw feeding that I'm doing as well. So, you know, as you mentioned earlier, which I really love, is like the minimizing the stress, right? And I believe that if we can minimize the stress externally, but also in, you know, via additional supplements, you know, I sometimes will even, you know, just diffuse at home, you know, not in you know, diffuse lavenders and, you know, essential oils and things like that, you know, just to assist, you know, with the dogs. I've had people on the podcast that do animal Reiki, you know, to assist with, you know, just animal, you know, energy flow. And I'm always experimenting, you know, and how we can potentially decrease, you know, those stress or the anxiety levels. So therefore the dog can perform at its maximum.
Yeah, so one of the things that we like to run with our dogs, that we do with our dogs on a regular basis, no matter what, is that once a dog eats, he goes back into his crate for 45 minutes to an hour. We don't, it is a time where it allows his food to calm down, settle in, and he has no activities. Even if it's going to be an operational deployment, unless it's an emergency, we'll run another dog in its place. So that's why we stagger our dogs' feeding times out. But I think I see a lot of people that just feed their dog and then let him exercise in the yard. And really, that's not the healthiest thing to do for your dog. Mm-hmm. We find that you could have bloat that happens with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, food is meant to do one thing for a dog. And I tell people, a dog will sleep for 23 hours a day and give you 150% for an hour. And that might be the thing that you need for that dog. Mm-hmm. So I like to let our dog rest. It's their decompression time for them. Mm-hmm. They know that when they're in their crate, it's rest time for our dogs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm guilty. Our dogs come here and they come to my house and they have their crate. Their crate doors are always open. They can sleep there or they can sleep on my couch. Mm-hmm. It's a leather couch. So I put blankets down. My wife says, get them on the floor. So, and, you know, our dogs are groomed on a regular basis. That's why you see our schnauzer and like, what kind of, that's a schnauzer. I see the beard, but the haircut. And so our dogs are run very tight on their haircut from 12 years ago. People said, a number of guys used to say, those dogs are really cute, man. I said, yeah, they are. Wait till you feel the bite, the nuts. Then you'll tell me how cute they are.
That's right.
So we do that for one reason, and for your audience, while we keep the haircut on our dogs so tight, is that we can see trauma. Mm-hmm. So if they're cut, we can see the blood very quickly. And it also keeps the fleas and ticks off of them. I mean, our dogs are literally groomed on a regular basis for us. So a lot of work goes into these dogs, man, if you can't tell.
Yeah, for sure. And I absolutely love it. And like, you know, once again, for, you know, listeners out there, you know, we're talking, you know, you guys are, you know, part of the pinnacle, you know, and I know that, you know, if anyone out there listening can take just bits and pieces from our conversation today, you know, and implement it, you know, fantastic. You know, I know that not everyone's going to have the, you know, capabilities, the budgets, the, you know, et cetera, to be able to, you know, mimic or replicate what you guys do, but you know, just get some education, educate yourself, whether you have a team or a pet dog, and that's what this podcast is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good points there, and I guess I want to kind of finish off by saying it's doesn't matter what kind of dog you have. If you care enough to have the dog, then you should care enough to really be concerned about what you're putting down its gut, number one, how you exercise, how you train it. And then also, every dog, no matter what kind of dog they are, plays an important role. And I tell people this all the time. I say, hey, what kind of dog you have? Because I see this with operators all the time, or other canine handlers. You know, they tell me about their dog. I said, man, you have the best dog. Your dog's the best, right? I never say my dog's better than anybody else's dog. And the reason why is that, honestly, my dog is doing the job that it's been designed to do, that's been trained to do for me and our unit. But my dog can go into another world, right? Into like a sports world. And there's another little shih tzu that runs circles around it because it goes through the obstacles and the agility course faster. Have you seen some of those small dogs, man? Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. I get a headache just watching them weave in and out in a slalom. I'm like, how do you do that? I can barely dance myself and do this two-step shuffle. And these little, whatever they are, doing amazing. But man, it's great. I love this podcast, dude.
Thank you. And you know, and let's, you know, so I suppose finish up there. I wanted to say thank you very much, you know, for taking the time to come on. If anyone out there wants to, you know, follow you, can you drop some handles and things like that?
Yeah, sure. So if you go on my IG Instagram page, I believe it's STL_Garcia, GARCIA, _ Kilo1, KILO, the number one. And that's my Instagram page, or STL Joseph Garcia on Facebook. I don't do a Twitter or anything else like that, because don't really have much to say other than hi.
Fantastic. So, you know, senior team leader Joseph Garcia, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the Dogs and Dead Loose podcast. Once again, really appreciate your time and a look at inside your world of special operations. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for you or a friend that loves dogs and fitness? Dogs and Deadlifts has you covered with merchandise and giftware, including t-shirts, hoodies, cushion covers, mugs, plus much more. Head over to teespring.com/dogsanddeadlifts. That's teespring.com/dogsanddeadlifts. Or check out the link in the podcast notes.